Several local races are headed to a May runoff election in Jacksonville. This morning, we continue our conversations with the candidates on the ballot. Good Thursday morning. We're live from Studio 5, and this is First Coast Connect. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, we speak with City Councilman Tommy Hazzouri, hoping to keep his seat in the at-large Group 3 race. You can get on the line now. Join the conversation. What are your questions for Tommy Hazzouri? It's 549-2937. Then later, it's a new Degas exhibit at the Leitner Museum in St. Augustine. You won't want to miss that if you're a fan of Impressionist art. Plus, April is National Donate Life Month, how you can be part of organ donation via this weekend's Katie Ride up on Amelia Island. We'll tell you about that, too. All of that ahead this morning. But first this hour, several local races are headed to a runoff election in May. That's because the candidates on those ballots didn't clear the 50% threshold plus one vote in the March city elections. So you're being asked to go out and vote again, Duval. Here on the show, we're trying to help you by profiling the Jacksonville City Council at-large races this spring as we host the candidates asking for your vote. We continue our series conversations with the candidates this morning as we welcome Tommy Hazzouri. He is the Democratic candidate for Jacksonville City Council at-large Group 3 as he seeks re-election, and he joins us now in studio. Tommy Hazzouri, good to have you on the show. Good morning.
Good to be here again, Melissa. Thank you very much for inviting me.
It's 549-2937. What are your questions for Councilman, former mayor, former legislator, former school board member Tommy Hazzouri? 549-2937, or go online. Send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. Already getting your tweets. And we welcome your questions on Facebook, too. And we spoke to your opponent, Republican Greg Rochelle, on Tuesday. So this morning, we're pleased to welcome you as we discuss this at-large race. Councilman Hazzouri, you're going into a runoff. You're perhaps the most widely known and esteemed Democrat in Duval County. Yet you had an opponent in March who took some votes away from you, another Democrat on the ballot. As you face the runoff election, what's your message to Democrats who didn't vote for you in March, maybe because they don't like your close alliance with Republican Mayor Lenny Curry?
Hoping that the Democrats come home. You know, I've been a Democrat all my life, but I certainly understand as a former legislator and in the legislative process and as a former mayor, the relationship between a legislative body and the executive branch. I think very highly of Lenny Curry. We've had our differences, especially at the beginning, but I've supported his issues. We have all done it on the pension crisis that we had. I went on TV for him and for us, really, not just for him. And the Kids Hope Alliance, $42 million, and our former Children's Commission entity now, and as well as he helped with our HRO. He may not have been for it. It wasn't prudent, but he sent it to us within an hour after we passed it. And that was big time. That was as important as a vote for us, and it became law. There are a number of issues, and, you know, there are three Republicans in the race. I had a choice, which is no Democrat, and that may have been another consideration. And I chose the one I work best with, the one I know I can work with on the next 4 years. The next 4 years are going to be exciting. I think everybody's going to see a different Jacksonville, a vibrant Jacksonville, a more inclusive Jacksonville.
Why do you say that? What do you, if you're reelected, what will be exciting? What initiatives do you prioritize for the next 4 years?
I've always been one for human rights, and trafficking is an important issue to me. Our children, as a former, as a husband of a 43-year teacher and a son who teaches in his 13-year, education has been a very big part. I'm the liaison for the Duval County School Board. We have a lot of hope in what Dr. Green, the new superintendent, is going to be doing and what they're trying to do and new strategy with the existing schools that are 50 years of age or older. And consolidating some of the schools, but knowing that they have to go to the community to gather a consensus. But also downtown, our neighborhoods. We know that crime, first of all, is the number one issue. There's no question. And we have declared a war on crime. I think with the addition of the 180 police officers, what we're doing now with the Cure Violence program that's been successful, we just funded some $700,000 the other night at the council meeting. The program that we have in existence now that the task force that the council created on safety and crime reduction, 46-member community. You know, the sheriff said it best, you can't police your way out of crime and violence, and you can't. It takes the sheriff's office, the mayor, the council, the school board, but most importantly, the village. And that's where we're going to and into the neighborhoods and going after the gangs. I'm excited. And what downtown's going to look like in the next 4 years. You're going to see a different downtown, one that's going to be welcoming, one is going to have entertainment, it's going to have housing, it's going to have retail. In addition to that, we're not going to forget our neighborhoods. We have to go in there and take care of the infrastructure, try to bring retail to the north side, to all over Jacksonville. And we have programs in place to do exactly that. And I'm excited about it. 7, 8, 9, and 10, those districts feel mm-hmm. like that they've been left behind, and they have. It wasn't promises broken from consolidation when they passed it 50 years ago. I think it was promises that were yet unkept.
Lots of calls already for Tommy Hazzouri as he heads to a runoff election in May. We'll go to them in a moment at 549-2937. Okay, you just went over a lot of priorities there. everything from education to crime to downtown development to neighborhoods. Let's take these one by one. The school issue. Of course, you served on the school board. The city council doesn't really have authority over the school budget or school priorities. So how will you try to make a positive impact? Let's start with that issue, education.
We have a responsibility, I think, as well, all of us have a responsibility for our education system, whether it's charter, parochial, private, or public education. What I don't want to see is our public education system be undermined by the lack of funding from the state for one entity over another. And that seems to be the direction that we're going. I don't fault any of these programs, but you can't leave our public institutions behind. We have schools in Jacksonville that are 50 years of age or older. They need to be repaired. We need to replace some of them. We need to consolidate some of them. And as their liaison, we need to look at, again, removing the school board off the waterfront. We know that that's an important issue to maybe be part of the package that they present to the city. But we also need to know, you need to know that the Kids Hope Alliance works hand in hand. It's part of the city. It's an arm of the city, hand in hand with the school system, after school programs, providing job opportunities in the summertime, the summer camp programs. And at the same time, we have grants going to different areas, small grants and big grants from the Kids Hope Alliance, to encourage the neighborhoods, one child at a time, to work with them to make sure that they're off the streets and getting an education. Our library system mm-hmm. is part of that learning process as well, teaching the parents to be able to read to their kids. You know, sometimes when the children go home to read, the parents can't read. So we need to make sure that they're learning to read so that they can read to their children or as a guardian, they can read as well. And It's a big process, but it's something that we're close to being an A school district. The difference when Jacksonville, I'll finish with this part. Difference in Jacksonville, you take St. John's County, I live in Mandarin, I compare Mandarin schools, but it should be the way to any of them in Mandarin, but all of them should be the same in the same situation. We know it's different because we have urban, suburban, and rural district in 840 square miles of Jacksonville. St. John's County have very little low-income children. We have 70% on free and reduced lunches. So we know that we can work in interlocal agreements with them, parks, playgrounds, libraries. There's a number of things. And if you don't know what you can do with them, you come up and create something new to supplement and complement what the state's doing.
Now, you mentioned the Cure Violence program, which Jacksonville approved, $700,000 investment. This is a program.
The other night.
Yeah, just the other night. This is a program that's worked in other cities like Chicago, for example, where people are actually embedded in neighborhoods. They're called violence interrupters, not police, but just regular civilian citizens trying to work with the police to stop crime.
Ex-convicts, I might add.
And ex-convicts. So Jacksonville has committed to Cure Violence. Let me ask you a question I've asked a lot of other candidates and office holders. When we look at the city's crime rate and the way programs such as the Jacksonville Journey have been defunded over the years, the more comprehensive look at prevention and intervention initiatives. Would you support a dedicated funding source, a permanent initiative going beyond this Cure Violence pilot to really get at the root causes of violent crime in this city?
You know, that's an issue ever since I've been mayor. Dedicated funding source for the children's services, dedicated funding source for crime, one for schools, one for the latest one was for our library system. And, you know, and you're talking about taxes when you're talking about that. To me, our dedicated funding source is what we're doing right now. We put 180 new police officers, and I'm not just, that's not the only way to deal with JSO. We've been building the JSO all these years based on what the sheriff is recommending, and we're following whatever the sheriff and the state attorney thinks we need to be doing. But we also have funded $42 million in the Kids Hope Alliance. That's big time in what they're doing in that program. It's a citizens involved committee. And as far as a dedicated source per se, we have a dedicated source with half of our budget going to public safety.
What about the argument, though, that what we're doing isn't working well? We continue to lead the state in homicides. We continue to have unacceptable rates of gun violence. What about the argument that the programs, the initiatives, the what we're doing in place, it hasn't worked well for years?
What we're doing now, I think it's going to give us a 180-degree turnaround. The Cure Violence Program, the Task Force on Safety and Crime Reduction, what the sheriff is doing. You know, you can't, every crime is going to, especially violent crime, has been an issue forever. Sometimes it's heavier in one month than the is in the other. I think what we're doing now with the Kids Hope Alliance, with the Safety Crime Reduction for Intervention and Prevention Programs, the Cure Violence Program, this is a war on crime. And we're all part of that war, and we're going to win that war. We may not reduce all of the crime that takes place in any community with almost 1 million people, but I'm telling you, we're going to be making a difference. We're making a difference. And if you talk to the sheriff, you'll see those statistics. And they always like to compare Jacksonville to the others, but to compare in Jacksonville, you're comparing Duval County with Tampa and Miami. You're not comparing them to their counties.
Okay, and jammed lines for Councilman Tommy Hazzuri as he seeks re-election, heading to a runoff in May against Republican Greg Rochelle, who we hosted the other day. What are your questions? It's Ty in Jacksonville to start us off. Ty, you're on the air. Hi, Ty. Good morning.
Hello. Hello, Melissa. First of all, I want to respond to what Mr. Hazzuri said, especially in regards to Duval County Public Schools. The city council missed a huge opportunity in regards to construction and impact fees. That's one of the reasons why our schools are in the condition that they are now as far as the financial situation. The other thing I wanted to talk about was the fact the sweepstakes businesses, those internet cafes that are proliferating District 7, 8, 9, and 10. Years ago, they had an opportunity to stop them. Now we're in a point where instead of being proactive, we're at a position where we have to having to be reactive to get rid of those particular businesses because they're bringing in additional crime. We have assaults, we have prostitution, in areas where those things weren't prevalent. But my real question to him is, why hasn't he tried to go to another level? He keeps running for a school board, for a city council, for local offices. Why doesn't he try to run for a state where he can do something different and maybe implement some other programs? Because here in Jacksonville, it's time for some new thinking and for some new blood. It doesn't have anything to do with his age, but it's just the fact that we need some different thinking because the thinking that we've had previously hasn't been working.
Okay, Ty. All right. What about that argument? And
you,
by the way,
let me just say,
I know your opponent, Greg Rochelle, made that argument on this program Tuesday. It's time for new thinking, new blood in local offices. What's your reaction to that?
That's an easy answer. And, you know, I guess I can just quote President Reagan when he told Mondale back when he said, I won't talk about my age. I won't talk about your youthfulness and inexperience if you don't talk about my age. You know, I guarantee you, Ty, is it Ty? That there's not anyone out there as energetic and as progressive as I am and as conservative as I am when it comes to fiscal conservativeness and going out and addressing issues. Do you think that my opponent would have done the human rights ordinance? Do you think that he would have worked out an issue where the mayor would take a big chance in passing human rights, which opens this city to everyone? Do you think that human trafficking is something of the past? I was in the legislature for 12 years. I chaired the Education Committee, the Retirement Personnel and Collective Bargaining Committee, where we have one of the largest, most efficient public pension systems in the country. You know, don't talk to me about what you can do. We've got 8 new members coming on board. You need the experience, the institutional knowledge, and I'm not giving up 1 ounce of energy for not being out there and leading.
And you don't have any interest in going for another statewide office, as she asked about?
I think I said already that this is my last hurrah. I've been in the legislature for 12 years. I served on the school board as chairman, delegation chairman, mayor of this great city where we got rid of the tolls, the odor, kept Maxwell House in Jacksonville. You don't call that progressive, my lady? It's a, let me tell you, I'll put myself up against anybody. We did more in 4 years than most mayors could do in 8.
So you reject the criticism leveled at you by some during this March election, some that voted for the other Democrat on the ballot, which is why you're in, honestly, why you're in the runoff now. They felt that you were, in their words, a dino, a Democrat in name only, too closely tied to the mayor, who's the former Republican Party chair of Florida.
I can't speak for his national politics. I don't agree with that. That's not my purpose here. We are a local government. There's no Republican potholes or no Democratic potholes. I think I transcend parties. I go across the aisle. I've always done that. I've been Tommy Azuri, who stands up for what I believe is right and what I think that the people want. I went against him when he was removing some Democrats from the different boards and commissions. I didn't think that was the right thing to do. But, you know, it's behind us. And we've worked great together. And I would rather have someone that I know that I can move forward with and agree with on the issues that we need to do to, as a former mayor, to move Jacksonville forward. I challenge any candidate, old or young, to match their record with mine and my enthusiasm and knowledge and skills and ability to lead anytime that they would like to do that.
Let's go to Lee on the north side now. Hi, Lee. You're on with Councilman Hazuri.
Good morning, Melissa. How are you?
Okay, thanks. Go ahead.
My question is simple. I just wanted to ask the former mayor if he publicly had the current mayor's endorsement because he stuck his neck out for him. So I wanted to know if it was reciprocal.
Does Mayor Curry, will he endorse you?
I haven't asked him. He hasn't asked me. That wasn't the purpose of why I endorsed him. I chose him because you remember what I said earlier, that there are 3 Republicans and 1 non-party person. To me, I have a great relationship with them. I know the importance of a relationship between the legislative body and the executive branch. I had to do that when I was mayor. I had to do that with 2 governors when I was in the legislature. I don't need to ask him to support me. I did support him because that's who I would think that would be the best leader for Jacksonville, and he's proven that. Whether you agree with him or don't, all of the mayors have different
personalities. So he's not going to endorse. He's going to sit this one out?
Oh, I haven't even asked.
You haven't even talked. You think you can win without it?
I don't run just to tag on to somebody. The mayor supports me. I know that. I think every mayor at the beach supports me, and they've endorsed me. Every mayor here in Jacksonville, past mayors support me.
Are you playing a long game? Are you seeking the council presidency if you are reelected, as is expected?
Well, I just got 9 pledges yesterday, so I need
to be
vice president.
To be vice president of
the
council.
Right, you have to be vice president. I mean, and hopefully, unlike Crescent Benny, he deserved to have been elected president. He was knocked out by Anna Boucher, who really was very disappointing.
But why does it have to be that way? The next person in line.
It doesn't have to be. But you know, you learn working with, like, right now, I've seen a great relationship between Aaron Bowman and Scott Wilson, who is the vice president today. You learn, you listen, you lead, you learn how the operation of the presidency works, and yet at the same time, you're working with all 18 other council members, Republicans, Democrats alike. For me, I'm an at-large councilman. I'm like the 6th man, each of us, 6th person in a council district, because they have 5 council at-large plus the council person. The mayor's thing is a non-issue with me. Look at my record. Look at my leadership. Look at what we need to move Jacksonville forward. I'm excited about it. I hope that people turn out and vote. They expect a low turnout. I'm all in, And I hope that the citizens of Jacksonville will be all in for me in my reelection.
And let's go to Bob now in St. Augustine. Hello, Bob. Thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Good morning. You were talking about there are no Republican or Democratic potholes. When I was a citizen at the beaches and the mayor was in the legislature, we attacked the toll problems and we ended up getting rid of the tolls. And he showed up day after day. He came to meetings because he was committed to an issue. I was nobody. I had no power. I was simply a citizen. I think he's committed to do what's right for the citizens of Duval County. And the Republican-Democrat thing is something that shouldn't be an issue in this thing, just who is the best person to serve. And my question is, what are your thoughts about the current situation with our roads and traffic?
Okay. Yeah. How about that?
Well, first of all, I'm against the tolls that they're putting up, these so-called Lexus lanes. I don't think they're going to pay the price of the repairs, even by the private companies who are doing this. I said that we wouldn't have tolls again, and we're not on our bridges and our roads that we took the tolls down on. Traffic, it's like in Tampa. Tampa did a great job downtown and in their city the past few years, but they are stuck bumper to bumper down there now. They didn't plan ahead. I think with the state's help and with what we're trying to do as a city, that you're going to see you're still going to see a lot of traffic. This city's growing. Like I said, we're near a night. I hate it every day when I'm going bumper to bumper down San Jose or if you go out to Butler. But we've got some plans and programs in place with Public Works, with the state, to try to alleviate as best we can. The growth is what I'm worried about. St. John's County, they're growing in leaps and bounds. And now all of us are big time. And we have everybody to draw from, and they're coming to Jacksonville to work. We're going to different counties to work. So the traffic's going to be picked up more and more. But we're on top of that, and I'm just like you. I was born and raised here. I don't know if you were, but and I know what it was like, and now I know what it is like. And you just have to go with the punches and start correcting, but be proactive instead of being reactive to issues.
Lots of calls, emails, and tweets for City Councilman Tommy Hazzuri as he heads into a runoff election in May. It looks like we have one of your former colleagues on the line, Councilman Katrina Brown, who is suspended from the City Katrina. Council. She's under indictment, actually. Is this Councilwoman Brown?
Yes.
I haven't heard your voice in a long time, Katrina. How are you?
Katrina Brown, thanks for calling in. Go ahead.
Listen, I called in because I served on the council with Tommy Hazzuri, and I can tell you this. Let me tell you from my perspective. Tommy Hazzuri supported a lot of the bills that I wanted to do for, which would benefit Northwest Jacksonville. He was a big advocate, co-sponsored, supported, stood up for a lot of issues that I fought for on the council. And two things I know that he fought real hard for. He was a big advocate of HRO, but he was a real big advocate for human trafficking, which the state of Florida is like really huge in human trafficking. So Tommy Hazzuri was one of the first ones to be on board with trying to stop human trafficking in Jacksonville. So if you get reelected, Tommy, what is going to be your big shebang this time? Because every year you always come up with something.
Councilwoman, I definitely want Councilman Hazzuri to answer that question. But first, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about your federal fraud trial, which is coming up. You're accused of extracting hundreds of thousands of dollars from a SBA loan for personal use related to your family's barbecue sauce plant. Can you share your thinking with us about how you plan to defend yourself in this upcoming federal trial?
Well, I can tell you, I'm very excited. If you're sitting next to Tommy will tell you I'm a real fighter. And so I'm just excited about it. I believe the government has provided me with two great lawyers. And so I believe it's, you know, you hear one side of the story. And so I believe going to court, you hear the truth. And so,
are you saying you're innocent of these charges?
Oh, definitely.
Why is the federal government accusing you then?
Well, you know, an indictment is nothing but a formal accusation. So, I mean, you know, anyone can get indicted. When you know, you can go to the grand jury and they always say the famous slogan, indicting the ham sandwich. So, you know, an indictment is just a formal accusation. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be found guilty. In the United States, we have what's called due process and the right to a fair trial. And so I'm just looking forward to the opportunity.
Okay, that's suspended Councilwoman Katrina Brown calling in to the show today. And Councilwoman Brown, thank you for sharing your insights about that with us and your question to Tommy Hazzouri. Okay, so there's your former colleague calling in, giving you a vote of confidence.
Well, you know, thank you, Katrina. You know, those who know you, work with you, and you know each other best, that's one of the reasons I supported the mayor. A colleague ran for mayor that I didn't support, that I thought that I couldn't leave Jacksonville. And I'm not saying this for the audience, that some of the members I know supported his opponent, but that's their privilege. And I chose one Republican over another. Katrina, thank you. You remember one day you asked me at the very beginning of the HRO whether I'd keep doing it if we didn't get it passed, and I told you absolutely.
You were a leader on that issue, which certainly progressives in this city cared a lot more about than conservatives. It did eventually get passed. Getting tweets about that, not that issue in particular, but a related issue. Please ask Tommy what's wrong with the Duval County Democratic Party. Why was there no Democratic candidate for mayor? As the city's most well-known Democrat, do you feel that the Democratic Party in this county failed to capitalize on momentum coming out of the November election, which Democratic gubernatorial candidate Andrew Gillum won here? He turned Duval blue in November. Did the Democratic Party fall down on that?
I don't know if they fell down. It's called building a bench. I probably was the most likely one to have run, and I don't want a divorce, and I wouldn't have run. You know, this is why I go back to Republican, Democrat. We probably shouldn't even have titles, Republicans or Democrats, when we're running. This is not the state legislative body or the state offices or the national government. Our work here on earth in Jacksonville is done by citizens who get elected. And as I said earlier about the Republican, Democratic potholes, you transcend, you work across the aisle for a common interest. And that's the best interest that's going to create the best quality of life for ourselves and our families.
Lots of tweets and Facebook comments for you. Let's start with Twitter. Here is a tweet from a listener. Will Councilman Hazzouri support the resiliency? Will he sign the resiliency pledge for Jacksonville, the St. John's Riverkeeper pledge?
I have already. I did it early on a month or two ago. And, you know, the resiliency, when we talk about resiliency, we're talking about our waterways. And certainly I know that we have some issues that we have to address. These are 100-year events that we get with these hurricanes like Irma and Matthew, and they came back-to-back. But to any city that gets those kinds of storms, and it doesn't happen every 100 years like we'd like them to be, but we have to be prepared. But look at Houston, look at these other places that suffer the same. And I think we're doing some things with these new committees we've created on the resiliency. But don't forget, resiliency is not just about our water and our climate. It's also about crime. It's also about infrastructure. It's also about the homeless. We have to build a resiliency for all of these issues and not leave a single one behind.
Okay, lots more tweets. Let's get to just a few more. And I'm scrolling through them. Here's one from Jim. One of the reasons our family moved away from Northeast Florida is because of the uncontrolled growth. What ideas does Tommy Hazzouri have when it comes to smart growth management?
I'm hoping that we're moving in that direction. You know, we're an older city. I don't want to keep comparing ourselves to St. John's County. That's the older city. But in the case of growth, you've seen the difference. So we're playing catch up, unfortunately, again, with urban, suburban rural. And I think we have plans in place. And whether we're dealing with our waterways, we have 1,200 miles of waterfront in Jacksonville that we definitely want to address and enhance to use for entertainment. For Lori Boyer's done a wonderful job with that, and I hope we can find someone that's going to pick up and keep running. Sustainability is the key. If I leave here today with one word, sustainability, and that is once you start on traffic, once you start on crime, and I don't mean start, we've started a long time ago, but you don't leave these programs behind and go to the next council or to the next mayor. We have a 5-year plan on the city council that's addressing all the issues that you're talking about now. Traffic is horrendous. The tolls aren't going to help us any. Even though they think they're going to move traffic faster, this city is growing, and we need to make sure that we plan that growth, especially in the new areas that you're going to see, especially the north side. That is opening up wide like Southeast Jacksonville has. Mm-hmm. So we're doing that right now, and I think that the councilmen out there are going to make sure that it's done.
Let's take one more call. It's Daniel who's calling from downtown. Hi, Daniel. Thanks for holding. Good morning. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
Tommy, how are you, sir?
Fine, thank you.
Hey, Tommy, talk about, I appreciate you being such a progressive leader in Jacksonville, but there's one topic that I want to ask you about when it comes to the opioid epidemic. I know you're on the committee with Guilford.
I sure am.
And you guys have done a great job of, you know, helping some folks over there with Suboxone and methadone. But medical marijuana is helping a lot of folks rid themselves off the opioids. What is your stance, and what will you do going forward to at least talk about the topic?
Okay, thanks. Expanding medical marijuana as a way to combat the opioid epidemic.
Well, I don't know that medical marijuana, and I'm not a doctor or a pharmaceutical expert. Now, Ron Salem's coming on board, and he'll be a part of that, and he certainly has some expertise in that area. But you're right, and Guilford's done a great job. Our committee has. And the biggest problem which we're facing now is not about, well, I don't know whether marijuana can do anything. The problem we've got now
is fentanyl.
It's fentanyl.
Yeah,
that is what's hurting. And marijuana hasn't been proven to help anyone. When they put that fentanyl mixed up with these other drugs.
Actually, cannabis has helped patients with pain reduction, nausea from chemo. Yeah, that's why the state approved use of medical marijuana.
Yes, but this is different than... I understand that. Mm-hmm. That's a medical use that the state's addressing right now, and we can do what we can as a local government in a local city. We can only do so much because the state then comes in and says you can't go past what we're trying to do. But what I wanted to say is when you're talking about opioids and you're talking about marijuana and then you're talking about fentanyl, you know, that is the kicker that is being imported here in Jacksonville and all over the country. We had a great meeting on it the other day. It is killing those who are even on opioids. They don't know it. They don't know what's in there, and it's deadly. And we've had a rise in the opioid deaths, suicides, and other deaths as a result of the opioid use. But if you 10-1, you'll see it that it's caused by fentanyl being included in that, and we need to make sure that we address that. And they're doing that on the state level as well. Guilford's on that committee, and they see the good job that we're trying to do up here. May not have answered your question entirely. I'm open to whatever marijuana can do for us. It's got to be controlled, and we have to make sure that we're not opening up the doors like Oregon or Washington, D.C. or Washington State or any of the other.
You're against full legalization.
I haven't... been asked that question.
I'm asking you now.
And you know, I don't know whether
I don't know legalization of marijuana.
I don't know I don't know that I would say that I am, because I don't know enough about it, to be honest with you. If I were in the legislature, I'd learn a lot more. They wanted to reduce I think it's a victimless crime for some, and I think I would rather hear from Melissa Nelson and others to share their knowledge, because that's where they come from and they know the crimes that get committed and from physicians as well. But I'm open-minded and always have been. And if it's good for our citizens, good for our city, good for our health, because we have to make sure three things that every government's got to be responsible for. That's the health, safety, and welfare of our community. And that's what our job is, and that's what we intend to do.
He's Councilman Tommy Hazzouri. Facing a runoff in May, let me make a quick plug for candidate forums coming up on April 18th around town in advance of early voting, which starts April 29th. You can come out and meet Councilman Hazzouri and his opponent, Greg Rochelle, at a forum that's going to be held on the 18th, 6:30 p.m. at the Southeast Regional Library. This is moderated by our news director, Jessica Palumbo. And so, Tommy Hazzouri, thank you so much for joining the show.
Thank you, Melissa. It's always a pleasure. And thank you, Jacksonville. Jacksonville, no matter who you vote for, and I hope it's me, this is an at-large seat. There are three district seats, two at-large. Turnout is expected to be low. Please turn out. Don't let the 9% prevail. That's what they're predicting. That's not very good for our city. And, you know, you elect the ones, just remember, your vote does count, and especially in election.
It'll especially count in this election. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And later in the hour, how you can see Impressionist master Degas, his work coming to a local museum. But up next, National Donate Life Month and the Katie Ride. This is First Coast Connect. We'll be right back.
Join WJCT and PNC Grow Up Great to celebrate Be My Neighbor Day, Saturday, May 11th from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the WJCT studios. Meet Daniel Tiger, Katarina Kitty Cat, and their friends. Tour TIAA Bank Field, meet community helpers, face painters, enjoy local food trucks, arts and crafts, and so much more. Reserve your spot today for this free, family-friendly community event by visiting WJCT.org. Start something good in your neighborhood.
Critics call it the secret Trump plan that could harm his re-election chances here in Florida. Hi, I'm Melissa Ross.
And I'm Tom Hudson. Join us Friday for the Florida Roundup.
This Friday, we look at new reporting showing that the Trump administration would like to revive a push for offshore drilling in Florida. A closer look at what it might mean for the environment and the politics.
Join the conversation on the Florida Roundup.
Friday at noon on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Jazz Night in America, 2017 NEA Jazz Master Dede Bridgewater.
I feel like somewhere I've been allowed into some special secret jazz club where not a lot of women are allowed. Whisper, listen.
With music from Songs of Freedom, a program curated by Ulysses Owens Jr. That's next time on Jazz Night in America. I'm Christian McBride.
Saturday nights at 8 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, before the weather gets too hot out there, you have an amazing opportunity to walk, run, or bike this Saturday at a very special event. It's the Katie Ride on Amelia Island. Now, this spring tradition on the First Coast is named in honor of Katie Caples, a young woman who died tragically, but in so doing saved lives with the incredible gift of organ donation. April is National Donate Life Month, so we're going to talk about organ donation right now as we welcome Dr. Martin May, Medical Director of the Kidney Pancreas Transplant Program at Mayo Clinic. Doctor, good to see you.
My pleasure.
And Amy Reese, she's a board member with the Katie Caples Foundation. Amy, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And in a moment, we'll speak with Dr. May about all the statistics around organ donation. But first, can you refresh people's memories about who Katie Caples was and why her life mattered so much?
Yes, Katie Caples was a teenager here in Jacksonville. She went to school at Bishop Kenny. She was on the cross-country team, and she exuded just a great spirit. She was killed in a car accident where she was flown to the trauma center where the doctors worked for 5 days to save her life, but they could not. And on the darkest day of her parents, David and Susan's life, donation was truly that silver lining. She saved 5 lives, her heart going to another 17-year-old.
And so 5 people lived because of Katie's family's decision to donate her organs.
That's right. And 33 people, their lives were restored through the gift of tissue donation, and 2 others through the gift of sight with cornea donation.
Amazing. So Dr. May, Katie's story is an example of how organ donation works and why people need to signify that they want to be an organ donor. This is National Donate Life Month. Tell me a little bit about Mayo Clinic's work here.
So our work basically is to bring both living donors and deceased donor options to our patients. We have people waiting for lung, heart, kidney, and liver transplantation. Currently on the kidney list at Mayo Clinic, we have about 700 people on the list. We're lucky enough to do about 150, 170 kidneys a year, but we could do more if we had more donors.
People have to make their wishes known. that they want to be an organ donor.
That's correct. They have ways of registering online, but even if they register online or through at the driver's license department, we want them sharing that information with the family to avoid any obstacles to donation.
That's right. You can easily indicate on your driver's license that you want to be an organ donor, but you have to tell your closest relatives too, don't you, Amy, so that they know.
That's right, because you don't want to have someone trying to make that decision when they are just absolutely devastated.
And as Dr. May said, so many people are on waiting lists in Jacksonville alone for kidneys and other organs. More than 100,000 people around the country need a life-saving organ transplant. So it's such an easy thing to do to become an organ donor, to say that you want to do this. One way people can support this is by coming out to the Katie Ride, which is such a great spring event. So it's coming up. I can't believe it's already this time of year again. It's coming up Saturday.
It is the 15th annual Katie Ride, sponsored by Mayo Clinic. You can come out. You'll hear amazing stories from donors, recipients, and you can register to be an organ donor.
Okay, so this is a walk, a bike, a run, isn't there a swim too?
Yes, there's a mini triathlon.
Okay, so what all happens at the Katie Ride?
So we start out with the breakfast in the morning. You can come out, you can pick your event, whatever you want to do. And then you'll start at 8:30, finish up, have lunch with us, hear those amazing stories we just talked about, and go about the rest of your day.
This is on Amelia Island. People need to come to 2500 Atlantic Avenue bright and early Saturday morning. You can register on site, of course.
You can register on site as early as 6:30.
And so, Dr. May, if people are just getting hip to this issue, this is a way to learn more and get out and get some exercise and join this community. It's a real community of people that are working on organ donation, of course.
You'll hear some wonderful stories. You'll hear stories of complete strangers that help save lives. It's a very rewarding experience, and not only that, it's a whole lot of fun.
What would you say to people who have hesitated to become an organ donor? They are scared, they're uncomfortable. How do you get them over that hump?
I think it's very important to know that your physician will do everything possible to save your life. They're not going to leave anything short. If there is no hope, that's when that decision becomes very valuable for the people and community waiting for organs.
Right. As Amy said, doctors tried to save Katie Caples for 5 days.
Correct.
And so, yeah.
They exhausted every option.
People have a lot of unfounded fears about organ donation, but I think it's important to realize this doesn't harm you in any way, and it can certainly make a huge difference in the lives and of so many other people who are waiting on these lists and their loved ones, too.
That's correct. So they're both deceased donor options, which we've talked about, living donor options. If you have the interest in offering a kidney to another individual, that is an option also for us.
Okay. So with all of that said, Amy, let's mention one more time. The Katie Ride, the 15th annual, is this Saturday, bright and early on Amelia Island. People can start checking in as early as 6 a.m., if they don't want to bike, if they don't want to run, they can just walk it. It's going to be a beautiful weekend, too.
It's going to be a beautiful weekend. We hope to see everyone out there.
Yeah. So come on out for the Katie Ride on Amelia Island this Saturday. And it's National Donate Life Month. Just make sure that you are an organ donor. Signify it on your driver's license. You can also register online. And make sure you share your wishes with your loved ones. Dr. Martin May, Mayo Clinic, and Amy Reese with the Katie Ride. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Melissa.
In a moment, a rare look at the work of pioneering artist Edgar Degas, how you can see it here in this area. We'll be right back.
Mayo Clinic. If you're looking for answers no one else has been able to find, you know where to go. Mayo Clinic. More at mayoclinic.org/Florida.
A1A Solar designs and installs residential and commercial solar electric systems. NABCET certified A1A Solar provides sustainable and financially efficient energy solutions. Learn whether solar is right for you with a 5-question quiz at a1asolar.com.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Henry Winkler, who won an Emmy for his portrayal of a self-important acting teacher in the HBO dark comedy series Barry. Winkler is known around the world for his role as the Fonz in the series Happy Days. We'll talk about his life and career.
Who would know more about me than me?
Join us today at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Friday is a big deadline for transgender troops. It's the last day to get a diagnosis of gender dysphoria to be able to be out at work.
Being put on the clock was awful.
Not just for one trans service member, but for her wife and kids.
I want people to understand that we're here too, the spouses, the children.
The impact of Trump's trans military ban. This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
To her friends, she was known as Barr. And for 92 years, happiness and heartache shaped Barbara Bush into one of the nation's most formidable first ladies. Married to our 41st president and mother to our 43rd, she set records and new expectations. Author Susan Page on the making of an American dynasty. That's next time on 1A.
Today at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
Back. Well, finally this hour, it is a rare look at the works of pioneering artist Edgar Degas, one of the leading lights of the 19th century Impressionist art movement. Degas is best known for his enchanting paintings of ballet dancers, both on and off stage. But little is widely known about this enigmatic artist's life and personality. You can learn more when Edgar Degas, the Private Impressionist, opens tomorrow at the Leitner Museum in St. Augustine. Megan Mosley, Development Coordinator and Interim Registrar for the Leitner, is here now. Hey, Megan. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
What a special treat for the First Coast. More than 50 original works by Degas. Probably the most popular impressionist short of Monet. I mean, this is really exciting have his work exhibited. How did this come to the Leitner Museum?
Well, this is a big deal for us. We did a lot of research. We hosted the Dressing Downton exhibit last year. And after the success of that, we decided we really want to focus on trying to bring more special exhibit opportunities to the First Coast area, things that people may not be able to see otherwise. So this is how we came across Degas. This is its second tour. It's been a very limited tour. There are only three venues. And so we're very happy to be able to host it.
This is drawings, prints, photographs, monotypes, and sculpture, along with some self-portraits of the artist and his fellow artists from the period, Mary Cassatt, Manet, another popular impressionist. This is an opportunity to really experience the mastery of impressionism up close. And why do you think this particular style, this movement from that era, still holds so much fascination today?
Well, I know part of Degas' fascination was he was interested in realism. He was educated at the École des Beaux-Arts in Paris, and so he came up from that very historical neoclassicist version of painting. And he was interested in sort of switching it up and focusing on the everyday lives of people. And I think that's something that resonates with us still today.
Do we know why he painted so many dancers?
I think, well, in the day, dancers were part of that common middle, lower class working group. And so, again, that was something that he was interested in. He was very interested in the movement of the human body. He also got interested in horse racing for the very same reason. And so I think these drawings are so important because they show a lot of that early technique, his foundational work that he put into the paintings. He would frequently go to places like the Louvre or, you know, out in the city to do these drawings, and then he'd take them back to the studio, and that's where he'd create his paintings.
Now, as you mentioned, the Dressing Downton exhibit was wildly popular at the Leitner, costumes from the Downton Abbey era.
Right.
this is an opportunity for people to visit the Lightner again, but with a new attraction. And for people in Jacksonville that maybe have never been to the Lightner Museum, this is a really good reason to go.
Yes.
And check it out. It's a beautiful museum.
Yes, thank you. It's a it was formerly the Alcazar Hotel, built by Henry Flagler in 1888. So we have a lot of history of the building preserved. And then, of course, the collection is Otto Leitner's collection, which highlights the Gilded Age time period. So late 19th century, early 20th century. One thing that our curator, Barry Myers, is excited about with this exhibit is that it's another chance, like with Downton, to incorporate pieces from the museum's collection. So a lot of French decorative arts will be a part of this exhibit as well.
It opens officially tomorrow, but a preview tonight, is that right?
Yes, opening reception tonight. Tickets are still available online, and then tickets for the exhibit are also available online, leitnermuseum.org.
You have several months to see the Degas exhibit at the Lightner, but it opens tomorrow if you just can't wait. So get your tickets now. This is a limited engagement showing of Edgar Degas, the private impressionist, opening officially tomorrow at the Lightner Museum in St. Augustine. Go see those tiny dancers. Megan Mosley, she's development coordinator and interim registrar for the Lightner Museum. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And that's our show. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Michelle Corum is our director. 1A is up next. I'm Melissa Ross, and we'll be back tomorrow at 9 a.m. for our Friday Media Roundtable. Have a great day.
Blue jean baby, L.A. lady, seamstress for the band, pretty eyes, pirate smile.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.